Blog Talk Radio.
Home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. It's Tuesday night. I want to send a big shout out first and foremost to our people listening across the pond on West Star Radio. Thank you for choosing to listen to the program on your drive time home this afternoon. It's my pleasure to have you along for the journey. Don't drive distracted, of course, and make sure to tell your friends about the show. Tonight we've got a very special guest, and I'm lucky to have this gentleman join our show. His name is David Harder. He's the author of two books, including The Truth About Work, A Single Act of Courage. He's a public speaker with popular topics like Four Reasons to Be Afraid of Change. He's also an animal lover. He's a board member of In Defense of Animals. And it's Mr. David Harder, who is here from his company called Inspired Work. David, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Thank you very much. I'm great, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, David, one of the things that I love to do is to talk about things that are near and dear to people's hearts. And one of the things that, you know, we all know is that, you know, we got to work for a living. And sometimes we have rewarding experiences, and sometimes the experiences aren't necessarily the best in the world. Can you kind of tell me your journey on how you came to create your company, Inspired Work?
Absolutely. We just had a program this past weekend, and I've been doing this work for 24 years, and to be in the presence of people who sort out all the greatness in their lives and they put that into a new form of work, the kind of work that for many people feels like they're finding the life they were meant to have, is a privilege. It's the greatest aspect of my own work today. I started the business in 1990, and a series of events happened in my life that led to this turning point. I was a staffing executive. I worked in two multinational companies. I ran the largest local staffing company in Los Angeles, and I was doing that until I'd get a record contract. I'm a jazz pianist, and I was putting on a suit during the day and putting on my performance clothes at night and going out to clubs and playing. And I wanted to make a very good living until I got a record contract. I wasn't interested in doing anything outside of that. And I did get a contract in early 1990. And 6 weeks into our project, my producer dropped out of our heart.
And, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, just gone. And I find very commonly with people that when someone has a brush with mortality, they start to look at the meaning of life. And I realized when my producer passed away that I'd been putting my happiness off into the future for many years. I really didn't like my work. I made a very good living from it. And there wasn't anything particularly strange about that. I knew very few people that were doing what they were born to do and making a good living from it. It seemed that people either were doing something that they aspired to do, that they loved to do, and not making a very good living, or people that were making great money and completely just passionate about the work. So I started to look at what it would take for people to create a great relationship with their work, and I assembled a team of behavioral scientists and academics to look at work in a totally new way. And the question became, what would it take for any one person to have the best relationship with their work possible? And we find today that this is a really important question to answer, because globally, Gallup just recently indicated that only 13% of the world's workers are engaged. That's dreadful. And over 80% of Americans don't really like what they're doing for a living. That's dreadful. And since we can solve that problem in 2 days, I find that the impact that our work has on us, if we're going to tell the truth about it, work is the biggest relationship that we have.
Sure.
Spend most of our waking hours getting ready for it, driving to it, being at it, driving home and recovering from it. And yet people seem to be so reliant about their work that, you know, when they would come into our employment agencies and want a new job, they were really saying, get me another job like the one I hated.
Exactly. Well, speaking of jobs that you hate, if you're listening tonight and are in that situation, our phone lines are going to be open this hour. We're live from 7 to 8 here. It's 323-657-1493. Again, 323-657-1493. I'm also on Facebook. I'm also in the Blog Talk chat room. So if you might not want to have your voice heard on the radio, that's fine. But send me a note, and we'll ask David for you if you want to do that. But he's here to help you tonight, so if you want to ask a question, now's a great time to do it. But so if we have 80% of the people, David, who, you know, just aren't happy with their work, and you get 13% of the people who are engaged, what are the – well, I mean, I've been in spots like that myself, but how are companies even making it through a single business day when the vast majority of their people are disconnected?
Well, most companies are filled with disengaged workers, so the competition is in the same place. And then the few companies that have what I would characterize as average engagement in their organizations are category leaders like Google and Apple and BMW and HBO are all companies that are good employers. They're really thinking about what it takes to be a great employer. But what I'm finding is happening today, I'm preparing a new book for market called The Great Disengagement, and it's subtitled How We Lost Our Enthusiasm for Work and How We Will Win It Back. And the more that we've researched this problem, we find that most people want to change. Most people want change, but they don't know how to change themselves, or they're too afraid to change themselves. So we're kind of stuck in this place where the rate of change in work is increasing so much that people are barely keeping up with it. We've helped over 42,000 people that have come through our programs change their lives, and the more that that's happened, I've come to the conclusion that people need to know how to change, and when they do that, they can put that new skill set towards creating much better lives.
So do you, with 42,000 people coming through your programs, what were your programs, how have your programs changed over the years? What was it like when you started on day one, and what's different about your programs today?
Well, our curriculum has changed a little bit, and we've also launched a number of new programs. We designed the Walt Disney Company's Leadership Program in 2001. That's been their most popular learning experience ever since. We deliver engagement programs to a wide variety of organizations. One of my favorite is USC. But the program that these 42,000 people have gone through has changed a little bit. When we developed it, it was surprisingly so complete that people immediately started to do these major ambitious things with their lives. And I'll share, if you'd like, one of my favorite anecdotes from those early days.
You bet. You bet, absolutely.
Okay. First Interstate Bank, some of us are old enough to remember the bank. It was one of the largest banks in the country, and it was the only national bank based in Los Angeles. And they started to fall apart in 1990, just as we were launching our business, and they sent thousands of employees through our program. So it was a tremendous learning experience for me. We had one gentleman named John Morgan, and this story has been published, so I'm not breaking a confidence. John was in his mid-50s. He was a senior marketing executive with the bank, and he walked in the door absolutely terrified. He brought his wife with him. He was really afraid that at his age of losing a job for life, and this is one of the big changes in the program is what's happening around it, people in 1990 were losing jobs for life for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's completely gone today. But John was really frightened about being at that age and having to find a new position. And he spent a lot of time on that first day complaining about what had happened to him. And the second day he walked in the door and he stood up and announced to everybody that first he apologized for being so unpleasant on the first day, and then he announced that he'd been in love with the art world his entire life and that he was going to devote the rest of his professional life to the art world. 3.5 years ago, I was reading the Sunday Times at the gym while I was biking, and I turned the page and there was his obituary. And I read John Morgan, leader in the Los Angeles art world.
Wow.
And I went on to talk about how he launched a charity that brings art education to inner city schools that's now delivered by the Getty. He launched a successful art gallery, and he raised millions for LACMA. And at the very footnote of the article, it said Mr. Morgan was previously in the banking industry. We have so many stories and legacies like that where people walked in the doors of our program feeling that they had a kind of mediocre relationship with their work, only to go on and do the kind of work that brought meaning and purpose to their life. But even just as importantly, they've done that successfully. I think one can't be done without the other for people to truly be happy with their work. You mentioned what's changed, and what's really changed is the way people use the program. In the early days, it was to create a major career change maybe once, and people would come out of the program and they'd say, "Boy, I'm glad that's over. You know, like I've come up with a decision. I'm glad that's over." And I had this hunch that it was only beginning. And the rate of change has increased so much since then that Kathy Sanding, the chancellor of University of Wisconsin, very close friend who's been studying the impact of change on education, and she states that the average college graduate today is going to be changing their careers, not their jobs, but their careers 4 to 6 times.
Holy cow.
We have nothing... Well, industries are rising and falling more quickly than ever before. So companies used to come and go. They're coming and going more quickly. But look at this. There's a company called Theranos, and I don't have her name right in front of me, but this was a young lady from Stanford who dropped out of college to start this diagnostic company. Where if we wanted to get blood tests, we'd go to a lab, and they'd draw painful vials of blood, and then we'd have to go back again if they needed to do more work. She came up with a revolution where you walk into a pharmacy, they give you a little tiny pinprick. That minute sample is able to deliver immediate hundreds of different tests, and they're able to use it over and over again. Sounds like a great innovation. It will blast thousands of jobs into the past. But right now we have digital printing is achieving such a rapid transformation in manufacturing that we're going to see literally hundreds of thousands of jobs go up in smoke. And what it really means is that today's worker not only ought to be looking at what makes them happy, but they need to get to that answer more quickly.
Well, 4 to 6, I guess I'm just kind of like staggered by the 4 to 6. You know, I've talked to the millennials that are out there, and, you know, I've got a good friend that works for a major company back in the Boston area, and he's a young whippersnapper in his early 20s. And a couple of years ago when we first met, I said, well, you know, so, you know, what are you going to, you know, be doing in, you know, 4, 6, 10 years, what's your plan? He says, well, I'll probably be here 2 to 3 years, and then I'll go work for somebody else doing something similar, and then I'll probably go and, you know, so I was getting used to the fact that you career hop versus are staying loyal to one company for, you know, 20 or 30 years and retiring with that Timex gold watch. And he had no problem about, you know, I'm going to be mobile, and I'm going to be ready to jump when it's time to jump, and I'm going to hedge my bets, and I'm going to do this while I'm young. And I was kind of taken aback by that. But I was just getting used to that, David, let alone the fact that you're going to change complete careers into, you know, one field into another.
I'm not put off by his point of view at all. In fact, a major part of what happens with our participants, regardless of whether they're in their 20s or their 60s, is that there's a shift of recognizing that holding on to this old fartish industrial revolution formula of seeking predictability and survival in work. You know, that's what we did for hundreds of years. We mm-hmm. set aside anything that involved beauty or meaning or interest in pursuit of predictability and survival. And that is so gone and dead. But the real opportunity that's in its place is that we've got an opportunity to grow. And we have an opportunity in this new world to grow so quickly that we can get far more out of our lives. And someone like your friend, in going to these different environments, it seems that his big driver is he wants growth experiences. He wants experiences that's going to give him more knowledge and more capability. People like that are really attractive recruits today.
Well, I've got a question off of Facebook here. Mary Lou is pinging mm-hmm. me, and she wants to know who is a good candidate for your programs? And she's asking just as an individual.
Well, first of all, the truth is anybody who works, because I find anybody who works. We are so frenzied today that we very rarely have the opportunity to sit down and do skills self-inquiry and how we want our work lives to look and how we can improve our circumstances. So anybody who works, we find, gets great benefits out of this. The people that tend to be the most interested in it are individuals that are fed up with mediocrity. You know, work occupies the biggest segment of our lives. So if we have a mediocre experience, you know, we drive through hostile traffic for hours, we go into a parking garage, we get in an elevator with people looking at their feet, and then we sit in a cubicle doing work that isn't very meaningful to us. Those are the people that I'm most excited about walking into our programs. But we also, like this past weekend, had a group of rock stars walk in the door who are just simply looking to up the ante even more. It's good for us to look at our lives and take stock. And I after years of watching people go into our self-inquiry, I started to say regularly that until we examine our lives, we're often living someone else's life.
Oh, I mean, that's powerful. Yeah, okay, I have a question for you, and this is going to mm-hmm. be the devil's advocate here. When you sure. have companies that are out there today that are just like, you know, come in number cruncher, come in, you know, peanut chaser, and just do mm-hmm. your job and don't, you know, don't make a fuss, just do what you're told and sit down and shut up and collect your paycheck on Friday. And, of course, probably told with a lot more sugar and sweetness than I just mm-hmm. made right there. But there are gazillions of jobs out there where they just want you to go in and do your job and don't make a fuss about anything. How do you approach those types of companies, and or do you approach those types of companies and say, you know, boy, we could make your workforce a whole lot happier if you took a listen to what we had to say?
Well,
because I would think those people would be the most resistant to doing anything because they just want the gremlins to come in and do the stuff.
Well, we find in companies like that very often the leaders are just disengaged as everybody else. So unless the only circumstances where we've been brought into companies like that is where a new CEO takes charge, or we have a new management team that's committed to getting that company higher up in the food chain. And that's really mm-hmm. when we have so many CEOs today who are fixated on the 80s and 90s formula of only creating shareholder value. That formula of bleeding out as much money from the company, the laziest, quickest thing to do to cut expenses is to cut labor. So we have a country that's filled with business leaders who are fixated on anything but long-term value, which requires strong relationships with talent. We tend not to work with those organizations because the companies that use us are very often placing talent as number one in their success. And you can see it every year in Fortune magazine's 100 best places to work are very often the same companies that show up as the most profitable.
And that makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. I've got Bill in upstate New York who just sent me a question on Facebook as well. He says, what should I expect to gain from your program? I think you kind of addressed that a little bit before, but I'm still asking a question for Bill.
Well, it's a variety of outcomes. The first one is clarity. I'm going to explain a little bit of what happens in our process. When I started Inspired Work, the country was very big on a career assessments, and I, in fact, went to UCLA and spent about $300 to get a career assessment. I poked holes in paper, and a career counselor told me I would make a good research librarian or a plant biologist. The career counselor, by the way, appeared far more miserable than me. I told her, I said, look, if I pursued either of these careers, just give me a rope and a stool.
Right, exactly.
So what happens in this process is I find that very often we've got into trouble because someone advised us to do something we didn't want. Like our parents, as we were growing up, we said something that we were interested in, and they'd say, that's a stupid idea, go get a real job. Or go get a degree. Not even what kind of a degree. The degree was selected based on the probability of security.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people, when they come into our program, the great power of what we do is Socratic. Socrates believed if you ask people the right questions, they come to their own truth. So our curriculum literally wraps itself around each person that comes through the program and organizes their truth into what they want to do with their lives, what they've grown into. I find that's a much more important question these days because people grow more quickly. And the questions lead people into insights of what's the best platform to do it. If it's a job, what kind of a job and what kind of organization, what culture? Is it time to start my own business? Is it time to work virtually? You know, a lot of people don't think about that, but the rapid changes in technology are allowing people to work out of their homes and even work out of a campground in some cases. So we're seeing a real revolution, and what this process allows people to do is to come up with clarity of what it is that they want to do with their careers and their work lives, what platform they want to do that on, and then equally important is what kind of support systems they're going to need to make it happen. Because once a person defines what they want to do with their life, their success is purely based on the quality of help that they get and the kind of help that they get. We can see this in every person that walks to the podium to accept an Academy Award or a Grammy Award. Successful people are very used to having support systems. We find that in our curriculum, this is a big awakening for a lot of people that we work with.
So in the curriculum that you are providing with Inspired Work,
mm-hmm.
Is this how long of a program is it? And I mean, just 2 days? Is it like 2 full days,
two days.
Or is it? Okay.
2 full days.
Wow. Okay. So that's not so bad because it's not like it's an 18-week program and, you know, you have to, you know, cross your fingers that that's going to be something. So do you normally do these like over a weekend or is it a weekday type of a thing? What's the commitment?
Well, when we're retained by a company, it can be any time of the week, but typically it's on a weekend. Our public programs are all on the weekends, and we deliver them in Los Angeles regularly once a month. We deliver them twice a year in New York, and today I just found out that we're going to start delivering in London.
Nice. How is technology helping your cause and what you do?
Well, technology is getting the word out more quickly, and we're actually in the midst of moving much of our business onto a digital platform. The challenge is this, is that what happens in those 2 days involves people and engagement with other people. Our participants bond so closely that we have alumni groups that go back 24 years. So when someone...
Wow.
Yeah, and it's harder to create that in a digital world. So we're going to be delivering this in different digital forms, but with all the research that we're looking at, we find that the value of coming together and having human interaction is it's still really important, particularly if we're going to deliver the results that we do in 2 days. We have people flying from all over the country because they want new lives.
I love it. So, and I'm a big fan of, you know, it's fine to do a telecourse, or it's fine to, you know, do a course online or something like that. But this is me speaking, not as anything else. I've always got the best interaction when I've looked at an instructor, looked you in the eye, or we're having that human interaction. We're right there in that same room together. That's when I learn the best. So I don't know. Maybe I'm old school that way, but I think that works for me.
And doing this candidly takes a little bit of courage. And so in a digital world, when someone's getting close to an obstacle that they might have, that could be a good time to turn off the course.
Sure.
And we're not like old school human potential of making people really uncomfortable and locking them in a room, but to keep them engaged when they're working with the obstacles that brought them to us to begin with is really healthy, because when we get past that, they can see the truth. And we have yet a way to find how to do that in a virtual setting. My new book, I love the virtual world, and it's allowing me to conduct interviews with major thought leaders and CEOs without leaving my house. I can do it on Skype.
Skype's a great tool, and I'm going to tell you, David, I've been so late to the Skype diving pool. I don't know what in the heck happened to me, but I'm now Skyping with my London stations all the time. I'm Skyping with, you know, clients on a regular basis, and it's scary. And 6 months ago, I was like, oh, I've got Skype loaded on my computer, but I'm just not going to do it. I can't do that. And now it's like, let's Skype. Let's talk, you know, right now. And I've really enjoyed that. So that, I think that's one way technology has helped. But getting back, and I don't want you to give away any trade secrets that you don't want to, or, you know, we don't want to go down that path. But what type of exercises and tools do the participants start when they walk in the door?
Well, on the first morning, we spend a great deal of time getting them prepared and to understand the self-inquiry process, and also to understand our viewpoints about what it really takes to change oneself and one's career today. And we want to help people understand how to change their relationship with fear, because we find that a lot of people get stuck around all the myths we've been fed about fear. So we talk about that. When we talk about how fear, the real purpose of fear on a biological level is to take action, and taking action is really what changes our lives and changes our careers. So, for example, we want people to understand the things that we do to sabotage that process. And we also show people that there are events that happen from the point that we make a commitment to change our lives to the point where we are succeeding. 20 years ago, I was walking out the door from one of our programs with my team, and at lunch I said, I've seen a few thousand people go through this process, and it doesn't matter what kind of background they come from, they all have the same issues about fear and ways to block their progress. So when we're looking at changing our lives, the first and easiest way to stop, just keep off the pathway, is to say, I don't know. you know, what do you want to do with your life? Garrett, I don't know. And we say that over and over again, right?
Yes.
Our culture, we've been conditioned to stay out of the game by simply saying, I don't know. And when we look at everything that's going on in our culture to distract us from our own truth, that seems real. But once people let go of that, once they start to make those changes, then we start to really get into the reasons that we're frightened. And so once we make a commitment to change, we have to tell somebody about it. So typically the first people that we tell are members of our tribe.
Sure.
And we find that when we tell members of our tribe what we're going to be doing with our lives, they almost mechanically respond with, you're crazy. You know, I'm going to leave the six-figure job I can do in a coma and go do what I really want to do. You're nuts.
Yeah.
We've had leaders in major companies step in with change initiatives where the employees gather around the water cooler and say, you're nuts. Tribes have rigid rituals and expectations. One of the funniest experiences I had, we had a program with about 36 Jewish male professionals, and they found each other during lunch. And they came back with the Jewish mother's hierarchy of acceptable career choices. And it was all based on how one mother's eyebrows responded when the other said what her son did for a living.
Oh,
and a minor rise was CPA. Halfway up the forehead was attorney. And up to the hairline was doctor. And a specialist provoked a natural facelift. So we take someone like that who would go home for Thanksgiving dinner and announce that he was opening a florist shop, which actually one of them did. The tribe is going to go nuts. So that tends to be a big influence for people, is what is our family going to think? What are my friends going to think? How am I going to tell people? How am I going to get their support? We also find that a step that happens for people who are going to be successful in any career is that they have to draw healthy attention to themselves. And that act of drawing attention to ourselves for many of us is the scariest one of all. Seems like you've done a lot of work in this area, but a lot of people are really scared about drawing attention to themselves and have a great deal of skill building to do in this area. And that tends to be a place where a lot of people get frightened and will actually avoid the skills that could help them change their lives.
Go ahead.
And finally, we find that most people don't really understand how to build a support system around a mission, vision, and purpose. And that tends to be where we do a lot of our work on the second day in the program, is helping them understand how they're going to leave that room and get the right people to help them. And it's a lot of what the work that we do with individuals afterwards is helping them connect with the right helpers, so that, for example, if they want to get a book out on the market, get them to the right editors, get them to the right auteurs to help them make that happen, versus just, you know, telling them go to an online course.
Well, and that was going to be my follow-up question, is how do people get the support that they are going to need to open that florist shop or become a published author or to do whatever it is that their dream is after they've, you know, taken the 2-day course? And it sounds like you're providing, you know, some direction and guidance to them post-workshop. Is that correct?
Well, it's on multiple levels. First, in the program, we actually help them through an audit of the existing support systems that they have in their lives and get them to an understanding of what kind of support they're going to need with this new venture. And then outside of the room, we have a community. We have 42,000 graduates that are quite loyal and interested in each other and helping each other. And that's gone on for years. And then we have hundreds of resources that we vetted over the years covering a wide range of interests and needs. And the way people stay in our resource directory in that circle is through feedback. If we get one piece of negative feedback about any resource that we refer people to, they're gone. So we don't have any conflict of interest. We don't accept advertising fees. We do that as a service because of it's our core philosophy is you need help if you're going to get ahead.
So have you had anybody come through the door that after, and I'm not asking you to name names or give any specifics that would be not well for you to say, but have you had anybody come through the door and say, I want to do XYZ, and at the end of the day you just thought to yourself, that is the weirdest thing I've ever heard somebody want to do?
No.
I love that. That's awesome.
No, I mean, I've never been asked that question before, but I had to really think. You know, I want to give you an honest answer. No.
Sure.
While you were going down that road, I'll share someone with you that I work with today, and that's a huge success story. I wrote my first book in 1998, and Jack Canfield got me a book deal with his publishing company, which did the Chicken Soup for the Soul series.
Right. Yeah.
And I was at a booksellers convention, and met another author. Her book was just being released. Her name's Linda Sivertson. Linda came through our program the next month. Her book was doing very well. And she walked in the door with this feeling pressured that she was going to have to write one book after another to grow this career. And in the midst of the program, she made a decision. And what she wanted to do with her life was to help other authors become successful. She's orchestrated 22 bestsellers since then.
Wow.
She has a hugely successful career. She's up in Carmel right now leading a retreat with women writers. They do these retreats every quarter, and these writers come home with a finished book proposal that they can start sending out to their publishers. She's ghostwritten some of the most famous books on the market. She, virtually any major purchasing editor or agent picks up the phone when she calls because they anticipate a miracle. She walks in the door with good news because she's so accurate and targeted and gifted in moving books through the world.
How cool is that? That's
someone,
great.
Yeah, and that's someone who came through our program where years ago that felt like a very raw almost, what do I do with this epiphany?
Mm-hmm.
That's turned into a hugely successful career.
I love, so Linda's a great example of success. How do you, or how do your participants measure success to make sure all the stuff that they have gone through in your courses and your networks are working? Do you do any benchmarking,
well,
or is it? How does that happen?
We do, and our customer service ratings, people have trouble believing them. But I'll give you another example that the real benchmark for me is how deeply personalized is the outcome of each participant. You know, we're not about cookie cutter careers here. We're about helping people get into a narrative that leads them into the life that they most want to have. And another recent example that's been published, so I can share it, is a gentleman named Dave Roth who came to us 6 months ago. Dave was a pioneer in Silicon Valley and very much one of the first people to start understanding and growing search engine optimization, social networking, and a wide variety of digital marketing techniques. He worked for some huge companies. When he was with us, when he came to us, he was with Realtor.com. and making very good money. But when the doors closed and he started talking about his life, this is a guy that has a wonderful family, two children. He was commuting 4 hours a day. He was working 10 to 12 hours a day. He was making very good money, and he was kind of caught up in a syndrome that I call the breadwinner's complex, where the breadwinner who's taken charge of taking care of the family will watch over everybody else but themselves. Mm-hmm. And they're often the ones that let go of their own dreams and ambitions. And while David came through the process, the first thing that he realized was that his work felt empty to him because it was all focused on increasing shareholder value. And he found that meaningless.
Right.
And so he started to formulate what he really wanted to do and what he wanted his children to know about him. And he made a decision to start his own business and to bring these Fortune 500, Fortune 100 digital processes to companies that are doing good in the world, to charities, to organizations that want to leave the world in a better place.
Mm.
He opened up his business in his home. He's already making as much money as he was in his old job, and he no longer commutes. He picks his kids up from school, and every time I see him, he's very happy and very content. So,
way to go.
Yeah, but I really want to point out is he did that. You know, I didn't sit there and assess him and say, well, you could do this and you should do this and this would be right for you.
Mm-hmm.
He answered our questions and started to create a narrative that this is what my heart wants. This is what I'd like, what I would most like. I want to do good in the world. I want to be there for my kids. And that ended up into being a rather remarkable new business and a rather remarkable new life. And the power of that is it came from its own truth.
I love now. Okay, I've got three or four more questions for you, and I promise to let you go. But it looks like you've got a couple of different programs on your website, and I would love for you to kind of tell me a little bit about what the difference is between them. You have like the Inspired Work Program and an Inspired Leadership Program. What is the difference between those two?
The Inspired Leadership Program is for companies only. That was developed initially at Disney. And what we do in this program is we move executives from ordering a performance, dictating performance, to communicating and connecting with their stakeholders in the way where they're getting the truth and they're getting much better feedback and they're connecting with the needs and expectations of their workers and motivating them with that information rather than just telling them, hit this target or you lose your job.
Okay.
Yeah, and that program is thoroughly customized for every organization that we work with, and it's also customized down to the circumstances of each executive that's in the program.
Let me ask you this. For that particular program, when, let's say, either you approach a company or a company approaches you, and you know you take a look at it, and I don't know what the average number of participants is in it, something like that, but let's say a company like a Disney. We're not saying Disney because that's company B. So company B comes to you. They're like that company A. How much time and of yours and your staff and your team is involved in either interviewing these people ahead of time or putting together a program like that before it's actually implemented? Because I have to imagine it's a huge time investment.
Hundreds and hundreds of hours.
Wow.
We're more in our delivery style. We're more like an Apple of looking very simple and elegant. So we want our users to have a simple and elegant experience, but the work that goes on behind the scenes, it's enormous.
Wow, that's impressive. That's impressive. So, and you also, I was looking on your website, and it looks like you've got something coming up on May 18th. It's an Inspired Social Networking opportunity. What is that about, David?
Well, we had an executive in our company a few years back who sat in his office for an entire year doing social networking, and I would periodically, and as respectfully as possible, ask where the business is.
Right. Okay.
And I developed this viewpoint of social networking, like it's kind of like junk mail, where people send out connection requests, and then you never hear from them again. And since then, we've become very, very sophisticated in our social networking digital program. Dave Roth, for example, is one of our leaders in that area with the business today. But I started to develop a new process that turned out to be quite impactful for our business clients as well as people who are building small businesses. And it started on October 2008. I refer to October 2008 as the business owner's 9/11. Every business owner that I know can tell me where they were, what was happening when we heard that the economy was crashing. And in looking at ways to rebuild our business base afterwards, I came to the conclusion that social networking offered us a footprint that could reach a lot of people very quickly, but we would have to develop new techniques to reach them. So we designed a communications process that literally builds relationships with targeted people. So we'll look at someone like a company that we want to work with, and we will build relationships with those people using social networking, but we use our own way of reaching out to them, of communicating with them. And the magic is most of them at some point say, I want to meet you, and that's when we get the business. Using this process, we have some clients today that say that over 90% of their business is coming to them, new business, coming to them using this process. So it's a simple course. We train people online with a computer and a phone, and it takes place in 4 modules, and each one they walk away with a big deliverable.
Wow. I need to sign up for that one. Goodness gracious. I need to sign up for all of your classes. This is great. So, David, as we get... This is great stuff. So as we get ready to wind down, I'm going to ask you 2 more things. Number one, where should people follow you, contact you on social media or otherwise? And then 2, what else would you like people to know either about yourself and or your organization?
Well, first, how to reach me, and then I'll share my own personal story. Our website is inspiredworkservices.com. Any listeners can reach out to me with a question directly at david@inspiredworkservices.com, and I'll do my very best to answer them. And you can find me on LinkedIn, and if you'd like to send out a request to connect, I'm happy to do that, and also on Facebook. A few years ago, I was being interviewed by Newsweek, and the journalist was asking me about employee engagement issues. In the middle of the conversation, she said, "You sound so excited about your work. What do you love about it the most?" And I said, "I get to be around miracles." And I came from a childhood that had a lot of difficulty in it. I grew up in a violent home. I managed to escape by being a very good concert pianist. But there were many times in my life where I really felt that I really couldn't see the purpose of it, and I'd gone through a lot of pain. In the 24 years since I started this work, I've come to the conclusion that finding one's work, the work that we want to make our life about, changes everything. And I watched that happen in my own life, where I think in 1990, I needed some form of redemption. I needed some way to look back on my life and know that I was actually making a difference. And I've watched thousands of people do that since that time. And going down that road isn't necessarily the easiest road to take, but it's the road that heals. It's the road that brings joy into our lives. It's even the road that when we look back at some of the most difficult circumstances that we might have encountered, that it all takes on a sense of purpose and meaning and right place. So I'm in this 100%.
I love it. Everybody, it's been Mr. David Harder. He is here with Inspired Work Services, and he has two links that I've put on the show page if you're watching, or listening on the Rated G Radio Network here. He has the Facebook fan page you can click on, or their actual website as well, in case you missed the web address earlier. And if you're listening on the Westar Radio Network, David, one more time on your website.
InspiredWorkServices.com.
Nice and easy. For everybody else, we'll be right back after Early Brighton's Unbroken. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hang on.
Thank you.
Remember when you said together till the end, we would stay together, chasing down forever, yet here I stand alone on this broken road, searching for my shattered heart, the pieces scattered. Every broken promise made makes me strive to push through pain, and I will fight the darkness with all the light I have within. Every page before this time, now erased from my mind. I'll divide my weakness into strength, though my memory is haunted, my hope remains undaunted, stronger than you left me lost.
Everybody, that's Aralee Brighton, her new single, Unbroken. Thank you very much, Aralee, for being on the show recently and showcasing that. But a big thank you tonight to Mr. David Harder. He's with Inspired Work, and the links for his Facebook page and website are on the show page if you're listening on Blog Talk, the Rated G Radio page. But if you're on the Westar Radio Network, again, it's inspiredworkservices.com. You can check him out. Maybe you have a company that you're working for, or maybe you're just not that inspired and you want to be. I highly encourage you to talk to David. I think you're going to have a great experience if you do that. Also want to remind you, as we've got new shows the rest of this week, tomorrow night we've got actor entertainer Mr. Sean Hill. He's going to be coming on to talk about his fundraising efforts to raise money to build homes for, well, people who need homes around the world. He's doing such a great humanitarian project, and we're very lucky and excited to have him on. Zoe Nicholas is our guest on Thursday. And then on Friday night's dance party is early at 5 p.m. with Enter the Paradox. We're doing a world premiere of their new single called Sweet Intentions with her frontman, Brian Bolan. And Brian's going to be coming on the line to talk about the show. We're doing this at 5 o'clock because later that night, Enter the Paradox is playing at the House of Blues in L.A. So he's doing their show so he can go and race off to do their live show at the House of Blues. So that will be really, really cool. Just a real quick shout-out to Rob Watson at the Santa Cruz radio station up in, well, it's called Santa Cruz KSCO 1080 AM. This Saturday night at 7 p.m., if you're in the Santa Cruz area, you'll get to listen to me go and talk to Rob about all kinds of stuff, so I'm excited about that. Let you know that next week we've got a full week of programming as well, including new music from Adara Ostiak. She's going to be coming on Thursday night because that was the only night we could get her on, and she's a hot new musical guest. She's going to be playing at Genghis Khan later in the month. She'll be talking about that. Also next Friday, just to talk about future shows that we have coming up, French on Friday. Never heard of them? You're going to. They did a cover of George Michael's Careless Whisper, and on the first day alone, they ended up with like a million hits on YouTube. So they're going to be on the show next Friday. I think we're going to do it at noon. They're in Austria, so we're trying to figure out the time zone difference and the time change and all of that. So that's on the 15th, just to kind of plant the seeds with you that we've got some other cool stuff coming up. And the other cool thing that's coming up is my single is dropping next Friday the 15th as well, Gay Wedding. It's a remake of Billy Idol's White Wedding, and I hope you enjoy it. If you like it, tell your radio stations they need to play it. And if you want to write an article about it, do that too. This is a little Gay Wedding for you, but we will be back live tomorrow night with Sean Hill. Don't drive distracted. Thank you for listening to Rated G Radio. Follow the show, and if you want, you can also download it on iTunes as well as a podcast. Have a great night.
Second to no one.
Hey, Mr.
Our time has come. Hey, Mr. marry your true love. Hey, Mr.
hot bun. If I not say to start again. If I not say for a gay wedding.
Sister, now you have the right. Hey, sister, she can be your wife. Hey, sister, true love. Hey, sister, go on, take her hand. Hey, sister, true love.
It's a not day to start again. It's a for a gay wedding. It's a nice day to start again.
listening to Rated G Radio.